It's Berlin briefing time, and this week we ask whether Germany will use any political capital to defend the rule of law. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz just declared the rules-based international order suspended for now. Yes, that has a lot to do with Donald Trump, but not only. So to unpack that, I have in our Washington studio our bureau chief Ines Pohl. And with me here in Berlin is Thorsten Benner, the co-founder and director of the Global Policy Institute. And I want to start with you, Thorsten, because this was in a newspaper interview in the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. And I cannot remember hearing a German Chancellor say anything like that there is a de facto suspension of the rules-based international order. What do you make of that?
I think I was very happy I read this, and thanks for having me. I read this clear statement by Mr. Merz, because you can only devise the right policies if you have the right analysis of the world we live in and of the difference we can make in it and our power that we have. And Merz says two things. One is that this is a world where power rules, hard power rules, where there's great power conflict, and where international law is more often than not obeyed. And the second thing he says is that Europe doesn't have what it takes to actually thrive and survive and shape this world. And I think that's an accurate description of the status quo. Just look at us being at the mercy of coercion by both Mr. Trump and President Xi, and that should give us pause.
I found it very interesting that he displays this kind of level of honest realpolitik analysis. But what he did not do he did not pledge that Germany, Europe's largest economy, and the European Union will stand in for that rule of law. It sounds very much resigned. And he does go on to say we're in a phase of transition to a time when strength will once again play a major role and rule-based agreements will fade into the background. So that seems like him giving up on that very concept that fundamentally undermines where German policymakers operate in. The first thing we always heard from advisors, and still do actually, is that Germany works according to a rules-based international order. And I just want to contrast that with what Angela Merkel said 9 years ago now, when Donald Trump was elected as US president the first time around. Let's take a listen.
Germany and America share similar values. Democracy, freedom, respect for the rule of law and for human dignity. Regardless of one's background, skin color, religion, gender, sexual orientation or political opinion. On the basis of these values, I offer close cooperation with the future president of the United States of America, Donald Trump.
So that pretty much sums up what's happened to the rules-based international order those past 9 years. So what's your expectation towards a German Chancellor Merz in standing in for these rules?
I don't think Merz gives up on international law and the values that actually Angela Merkel outlined. But I think he realized that what Angela Merkel did at the time is to actually read Donald Trump the Riot Act. If you follow these rules, we're happy to cooperate. That was from a position, I think, just a few days into his being elected, where we didn't have a war on the European continent, where we still felt secure of US security guarantees, and where China was not necessarily threatening us with economic coercion the way it's doing right now. We were still in a fairly blissful state. And I think Mr. Merz realizes we're in a very different world now, where it's not enough to say we'll have an alliance of multilateralism to bridge that historical aberration that was expected to be Donald Trump. But we're in a fundamentally new world where great power politics is the broad canvas on which we're operating. And if we want to defend these key values that Angela Merkel outlined and pursue our interest, we need power, not just soft power, not just normative power. We shouldn't have no longer the fantasy that Europe is a normative power and everybody else will just follow. But we need hard power, and we need, if necessary, be able to deter enemies and also coerce others who use coercion against us. And I think that's basically what Mr. Merz said. And that's standing up for international law, standing up for our values and interests actually can only happen on a basis of power, both within Germany and within the European Union. And that we're kind of weak right now. I think that's an accurate statement.
Ines, let me take that over to you across the Atlantic. How has Friedrich Merz been perceived so far in terms of standing his ground and protecting anything like power? After all, Germany is still the third largest economy in the world.
I mean, I find it interesting that you choose this soundbite from Angela Merkel, because I think it shows what was a big mistake in the past, that we mixed up values and interest. And sometimes when people talked about rule-based agreements and then in the same time said that we are sharing the same values, that was, and I agree with Thorsten here, kind of naive. We are now in an era which is clearly interest-driven, you know, shared values. What is that? What are the values of Donald Trump other than he wants to make great deals, great business? And this is kind of a new approach, also a new language. Friedrich Merz understands to use during his visits here. He came across as a strong leader. He also, of course, got a lot of praise from Donald Trump. People appreciated very much here in the United States that Germany, they say, finally has a leader who understands the role Germany has to play. Thorsten also talked about that. After all, we are a really rich and strong country in Europe and in the world, and we can't hide longer behind our past. That's what many people here tell us. So Friedrich Merz is coming across as a strong leader who is taking responsibility and who understands that the time has changed, and talking about shared values is not enough anymore.
I thought it was rather telling at that signing of the ceasefire agreement in Egypt. European leaders were there, but they were pretty much the decoration, because after all, they didn't sign anything. They didn't really have a role. In fact, they didn't even have a role in the actual process of hammering out that 20-point plan and getting that signed off on, whatever comes of it now. Emmanuel Macron chose to sit in the audience and was somewhat scorched by Donald Trump for doing so. And Friedrich Merz stood in his spot. This was highly choreographed, purely US-driven choreography. And it appeared like Donald Trump wasn't quite able to say his name. It appeared for a moment like he didn't remember his name even, describing him as a very tall leader working hard for his country. So what is he up against in trying to get any kind of German interests, European interests across in the US?
Oh, Donald Trump doesn't care about German or European interests. He only cares about his own interests. He made it clear in many, many occasions that he wants Europe to step up. He wants Europe to develop, like, the ability to defend itself without the support of the United States. Of course, Donald Trump is very much willing to make deals with Europe if he makes money out of it. But he doesn't also care about the images. If a European leader comes across as strong or weak, he basically really doesn't matter for him. It probably doesn't even exist for him in his mind. And therefore, he sometimes doesn't remember names, of course not, because he only cares about what matters immediately for him in the United States. And, you know, therefore, it's a very German perspective to think, oh, Trump is putting the European leaders here or there or not. He doesn't care. He doesn't have this understanding that a vivid, healthy, friendly transatlantic relationship is also good for the United States in itself. It's only good from the Trump perspective if he can make a deal, which in his understanding is profitable for his own country.
Thorsten, I want to take this to you, because the question of actually sticking to international law is one thing. Just sticking to law at all is also a fundamental question. Just to illustrate, we currently have a shutdown in the United States. There are thousands of employees, German employees, who are employed under German labor law by the US military. And in previous shutdowns, they always got paid because the US was keen to adhere to German labor law. in this case, now we have the German regional government debating and actually committing to paying their wages because the US is not meeting those commitments. Just a small illustration. How equipped are German policymakers, whom you advise, for this kind of new scenario of not being able to rely on the fundamentals?
I think that's a minor issue. I think if we had no bigger fish to fry but pay a few American soldiers, yeah, we would be in a very happy world. But the world we're in and we're not well equipped for is actually to thrive and survive in the competition of systems with both Donald Trump's kind of oligarchic tech supremacy capitalism that he's pushing and his transactionalism, and to thrive and survive in a world that's increasingly dominated by President Xi's authoritarian state capitalism. And we need to rethink our economic model for that. We need to kind of build our technological base again, become innovative again, and also able to, as I said before, deter aggression and protect ourselves against economic coercion. That's a tall order. And at the same time, I think we shouldn't forget, and coming back to the broader questions of international law and international institutions, that there's many countries around the world, middle powers, smaller powers, that actually treasure the international organizations that we have, that treasure humanitarian assistance. And we just have fewer resources going to this. So we need to rethink our priorities. Which parts of the international order of institutions do we want to prop up, support? How do we want to rebuild those institutions for a world where there's much less funding available? But that's a task for Germany as well, to defend ourselves against those who are hurting our interests, but at the same time also to reach out to like-minded players to actually sustain international institutions. It's not that this is the end of the United Nations. The UN actually survived a long period of the Cold War. We shouldn't just, you know, I think we're just resetting our expectations in a much more hostile and acrimonious international environment. But it's still worth fighting for these international institutions as much as it is worth building our own strength to defend our interests against those out there to hurt our interests.
Ines and I were reporting from the UN General Assembly meeting in September, and one thing that was clear, but it has been for some time, is that not just the continued paralysis of the UN Security Council, but also this off-the-cuff kind of policy, these blatant breaches of international law are really questioning the credibility, also why the global south countries, as they're called, should really buy into and invest in the system, and instead of rather orienting towards those big power players like the US, like China. And you cited China, and I thought there was a very interesting comment by Wang Yi, the Chinese foreign minister, at the last Munich Security Conference, bearing in mind that China is violating international law, for instance, by being active in the South China Sea, not sticking to the arbitration rulings in that region, infringing on the sea space of the Philippines, for instance, just one example. Let's just take a listen to what Wang Yi basically told world leaders gathered in Munich last February. This was just after the US President Donald Trump was elected for the second time.
The world today is witnessing incessant chaos and confusion, and one important reason is that some countries believe might makes right and have opened a Pandora's box marked the law of the jungle. In reality, all countries, regardless of size or strength, are stakeholders in international rule of law. The multipolar paradigm must not be a state of disarray. Without norms and standards, one may be at the table yesterday but end up on the menu tomorrow. Major countries must take the lead in honoring their words and upholding rule of law, and must not say one thing but do another or engage in zero-sum game.
So, zero-sum game, is that where we are? Also, what do you read between those lines? Because that could have been, we were looking at this quote, it could have been a Joe Biden quote from the past, yet it is the Chinese.
Oh, it's a kind of public opinion play of the Chinese leadership for public opinion in the non-West. And I think they have a pretty solid basis for this. Because first of all, what you refer to as the rules-based international order didn't have much buy-in from the non-West to begin with. I still vividly remember a session with a South African friend of mine where he said, like, stop talking about this rules-based international order, just burn it down. Because they, you know, he didn't believe in it because he thought it was skewed. It was just a cover for the West blatantly pursuing its own interests and not asking, you know, why do we call it the rules-based international order and not just international law? So there must be something special about these rules. So it didn't have that much buy-in to begin with, and the charges of hypocrisy and so on. Now you have Donald Trump, who makes you think the good old times where you could still accuse people of hypocrisy. Donald Trump is not shameable on hypocrisy. He doesn't even pretend he sticks and cares about international law. He's totally beyond that. The naked use of power is obvious. He doesn't mask it. He doesn't shield it. And I think the Chinese leadership that, of course, coerces others as well and takes its liberties with international law the same way other great powers do. It supports Russia's war of aggression against Ukraine. But it feels that it is perceived by many in the world more as a force of stability than the U.S. under Donald Trump. And to a degree, I think Wang Yi and the Chinese leadership has a fairly receptive audience out there in the world because many see Donald Trump's leadership where he can just blow Venezuelan boats out of the sea and just claim their drug smugglers, and there's no accountability for this. There's no due process for this. I think many around the world see that, see a very self-interested U.S. They also see a self-interested Chinese leadership, but that is maybe a little bit comes across as a little bit more rational and predictable, at least for many countries around the world. So it should give us pause that the Chinese leadership is able to make these arguments and even sound somewhat, you know, even though they're not based on facts, sound credible in the eyes of quite a few around the world.
Well, China, of course, also has a policy of creating dependencies, particularly in the Global South, in Africa, also Latin America. And I just want to take a listen to what Donald Trump said at the last UN General Assembly, because you just made the point that the UN is pretty durable, that there is still a receptive audience of countries that want to build on these institutions. Here's Donald Trump's demonstration of force at the UN.
What is the purpose of the United Nations? The UN has such tremendous potential. I've always said it. It has such tremendous, tremendous potential. But it's not even coming close to living up to that potential. For the most part, at least for now, all they seem to do is write a really strongly worded letter and then never follow that letter up. It's empty words, and empty words don't solve war.
So, Ines, that was a verbal blow. How deep is the disregard for the UN? And you also cover the UN, of course, for us. How damaged is it already by this?
Hi, I'm Kate Laycock, host of DW's weekly European current affairs programme, Inside Europe. Our correspondents were there when the Berlin Wall fell, when the Balkans Wars broke out, and when Britain voted to leave the European Union. Now the continent is changing again, and we're rising to the challenge, bringing you a combination of expert analysis and on-the-ground reporting. Join us every Thursday.
I have a little bit more of a pessimistic take, Torsten, than you when it comes to the UN. I think the UN is really in an existential crisis. And other bigger countries will follow kind of the example of Donald Trump. He's not willing to pay his fair share anymore. More and more countries will say, hey, if the biggest donor doesn't pay its money, why should we? And we talked a little bit about the so-called Global South. They don't feel represented in the UN anyhow. The UN, it's a major, huge bureaucracy. We all know that. You can have many good arguments for that, why there are so many people working in an institution like that. But at least here in the United States, and I think that's definitely also true for Germany and other countries, they're questioning much more these institutions and these big apparati. You know, is it really necessary to have so many people working there? What are they really doing? What is the outcome? So I honestly think the UN is in huge trouble, and I don't see them being really aware. You know, they are just reacting to Donald Trump and other countries which might follow. But I just have been in New York and tried to talk to some people. You know, what is your strategy? How do you want to come or get ahead of these threats from Trump and others to withdraw the necessary funding? I mean, they're running out of money in a couple of months, but I don't see them really ready to deal with that.
Well, there's a famous quote that the UN is not supposed to create heaven. It's supposed to be able to save mankind from hell. After all, it was founded after the Second World War. It directly, also the whole writing down of the UN Charter, those fundamental human rights were formulated under the impression of the Second World War and the Holocaust. Enes, what's your assessment? Is the UN, as it is right now, still able to do that?
Honestly, I think one of the main, of the leading, morally leading countries such as the United States, they lost their credibility a long time ago. And it's not only that they just recently bombard ships in international waters, Venezuelan ships. I mean, we just have to think about the Iraq war and other wars and other actions the United States took, which was far beyond any rule-based order in the past. So I think the legitimacy of the UN is really fading. And you know, this idea we need this body, which was founded 80 years ago after the Second World War, this time is further and further away, especially in countries which weren't so directly impacted by Nazi Germany, if this answers your question.
So I won't contradict you, Enes, on the state of affairs at the UN, especially the specialized agencies. The funding crunch is real. There's no clear strategy on how to deal with this hostile environment. That's all true. But it's partly also for Germany to actually help provide the impetus with like-minded players on how to actually save whatever is savable of the United Nations. And I do think the General Assembly, the Security Council, they will continue to exist. There's no other place where the Global South is so well represented than the General Assembly. It's a fairly egalitarian place per se. They will not walk away from that. And I think we've bashed Donald Trump quite a bit, but I think in a sense he was right that to a degree, you know, some of his actions are in total disregard of anything international law. But he has this obsession with peace and being a peacemaker. And he has succeeded in a number of instances where he actually has put the power of the United States and his office to use to actually facilitate peace agreements between warring parties. And that's very much in the spirit of the United Nations. And yes, of course, it's unconventional, but it also shows that Donald Trump may not be as one-sided as we discussed. This idea of facilitating, fostering peace seems to be dear to his heart, and if only for the vanity project of getting a Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, he clearly believes in the
ultimate deal.
Go on. Yeah.
I would like to jump in there because I think that's very true, and I truly believe that Donald Trump is more complex in a way that he sometimes is portrayed. And, you know, I'm really convinced that, you know, sometimes the outcome matters more than kind of the reasons behind it. And if he wants to have a peace in the Middle East because he wants to make deals there, fine with me, as long as the killing stops and as long as like humanitarian aid gets into Gaza, that's good. Same in Ukraine. If he wants to get a peace deal done because he wants the rare earths from Ukraine, that's fine. That's worth more than like all these value-driven big speeches with no outcome. I agree with that. And I actually also applaud Donald Trump in a way for his honesty. You know where you are with him. You know, he says, I believe in it. I think I have the right to do this and that. And he's not hiding behind some blurry whatever. And, you know, as other American presidents, they conducted strikes, drone strikes, and invaded countries, which was not kind of on the world rule-based order, but they didn't talk about it. Donald Trump talks about it. So at least we know what he's up to. And I think coming back to your point, Thorsten, it's in a way could be helpful for Germany and Europe because we know whom we are dealing with. Trump doesn't leave any doubt. He tells us what he cares about most, and that should tell us Europeans and Germans, okay, people, let's get ready. And one more thought, I think we also have to be very aware that this will not be over with Donald Trump. Even if Donald Trump will not be reelected, even if the Democratic Party will be elected during the next presidential election, I think we will never go back to an American where we have been like 5 or 10 years ago. Germany has to stand, Europe has to be stronger to defend itself, regardless who is in the White House.
Well, this is a very interesting point because, you know, I speak to many German politicians and many of them mostly off the record. That's why I found German Chancellor Merz saying this on the record. He basically said something on the record about the suspension of the rules-based international order that we had been getting off the record for a very long time. So it's a very conscious step into the public. The question I have and what I wonder about is, can you pick up where you left that global order, that rule of law, those institutions? If you fail to reform the United Nations, can you get back to that? Or is Pandora's box open and will we see something completely different when the dust has settled on this Trump administration, if ever does?
We'll see. I think that I can't predict this. I cannot answer this. Things are very much in flux. And I think we discussed before, you know, to erase unthinkable from our dictionary because, you know, there's nothing unthinkable right now. So I can't predict this. But what I will say is, first of all, it's good that Friedrich Merz is not putting lipstick on a pig. You know, he's actually telling it as it is. And then we can, you know, draw, you know, we need to build our own strength first. And only if we're strong, we can actually help stabilize the international system. We had this fantasy for a long time that we're the normative power that actually stabilizes the international system, where in reality, it was the hard power of the US that always took exceptions and exemptions from international law, but ultimately funded the UN, the international system to a significant degree. And it was also a unipolar moment where few other countries dared to take liberties the way Russia and China and others now, because they think they have the great power, potential and resources to take exceptions and exemptions from international law and not be punished for it. So we're in a world that is exactly like Friedrich Merz tells it. We need to build our own strength, and only through our own strength and working with like-minded partners can we help reform and stabilize the international order, because the interest of Germany in a still somewhat functioning international order where still more countries than not are adhering to international law, it is, of course, still there. We're small. We're still a fairly small. We are a small country in the greater scheme of things. And the rule of law, the international institutions are in our favor for the most part. But we need to reinvest in our own strength, economic, technological, military, in order to defend our interests in what is a much more volatile and hostile world we live in.
Ines, and I want to close with you. Do you think that the United States, potentially even this administration, could rediscover an interest in a somewhat functioning rules-based international order, or is that just over?
I don't know. It really depends. You know, I mean, I think this administration will understand that it, of course, also needs more reliability, more predictability than they have now. And we already see economical problems rising here in this country. So I think the way Donald Trump is kind of conducting his deals right now, very erratic. Many, many people, many business leaders in the United States don't know what he's going to do next. Even in his own administration, they sometimes don't know in the morning what kind of executive orders he will be signing in the afternoon. I see a shift there within the Trump administration or the next administration. But the bigger question, it's really to be answered. I don't know. It very much depends on what will be happening next year during the midterm elections. And, you know, if Donald Trump can keep changing this country in a speed he's doing it since he is in office, or if things will slow down. And then, of course, we have to see if the next presidential elections even will be taking place in a way they used to take place. So many, many open questions too early to answer.
So no surprising that uncertainty is what most business leaders are worried about when you speak to them, whether in Europe or the United States. Ines Poole, Torsten Benner, thank you very much for your analysis on the state of our rules-based international order. And thanks to you all for tuning in, for downloading, for watching, for listening. And the Berlin Briefing newsletter, of course, will keep you up to date if you want to check on what's happening in Germany and what impact German policy is having abroad, anywhere in between. Thanks for tuning in this time.